Before we get started with today's show, I wanted to tell you about another great podcast. The Mina Kimes Show featuring Lenny brings you the latest news and trends in and around the NFL. Join Mina and her guests such as Dominique Foxworth of The Right Time, insider and fantasy football focus host Field Yates, and ESPN Radio's Mike Golic Jr. If you like X's and O's, analytics, and probably too much dog talk, because Lenny's a dog, then give The Mina Kimes Show featuring Lenny a listen wherever you get your podcasts. Also, the Peabody and Emmy Award-winning 30 for 30 documentary film series presents The Tuck Rule, a documentary that examines one of the most controversial plays in sports history. See the legendary Charles Woodson and Tom Brady discuss, for the first time, the call that changed it all. Watch live February 6th at 8 p.m. Eastern on ESPN. Also available the next day on ESPN+. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to The Right Time. My name is Bomani Jones. Thanks for listening wherever you get your podcast. Rate us, review us, give us 5 stars. You only give us 4 stars, I'm inclined to believe you are a hater. Coming up on this episode of The Right Time, have we seen Tom Brady and Aaron Rodgers for the last time? Also, your stories about running up against future pros in athletic competition. But first... All right, ladies and gentlemen, this I believed all the way through was a mediocre NFL season. I just don't think it was, especially, man, coming down like the last 6 weeks or so. It was hard. We were scraping the bowl trying to find good games. And then we had that wild card weekend with all them sorry games. And then they gave us the division weekend, which was incredible, right? Like, that was 2 days of exciting, entertaining football. Even that Rams-Bucks game, which was looking like a blowout, turned out to be pretty damn good in the end. And then capped off with what we can only hope is the future of the NFL. Right there. Chiefs-Bills, right? Mahomes and Josh Allen. And, you know, we've been on a journey here on The Right Time with Josh Allen, but I feel as though I have demonstrated pretty clearly to you guys that I am not a hater. And that when Josh Allen was actually good, I was getting on board with Josh Allen actually being good. Now I'm like a fan. Like, I can't be a fan of the Bills, but that guy, that dude, Gabe, I told you, after the wild card weekend game, the Patriots, I already forgot whose doors they blew off, but it was the Patriots. Josh Allen looked like the best player in the league. Josh Allen came out there against Patrick Mahomes at Arrowhead, right? Like, they won the regular season game against them, but this is still their nemesis. Like, a playoff win is what you got to do because the Chiefs own the AFC, and the Chiefs have basically owned the AFC for the last 4 years. Like, they're that squad. Okay. Josh Allen and the Bills come in there, and Josh Allen looked every bit as good in this game as he had in the previous game. Now, did the Chiefs have some issues there? Yes. Tyrann Mathieu taking that head injury early was a big deal because some dude I've never heard of caught 4 touchdown passes, right? That's not to say Josh Allen himself did not play well. I just feel like strangers aren't going to catch 4 touchdown passes against what's become a good defense if Tyrann Mathieu was actually playing. Hey, if I'm wrong, I'm wrong. But I'm just saying, I acknowledge the Chiefs were not exactly playing up to full strength. But when you start talking about a game that is quarterback on one side, quarterback on the other, and we just going to go and see who gets this done, there ain't a lot of competition for this one. Like, you think about some kind of like back and forth slugfest type games and like all-time great playoff games, but I'm trying to think myself of games where it was so centered around the greatness of the quarterbacks that we saw. Not the teams as much as the quarterbacks themselves. And that was what we got out of this game. One dude's 26. One dude is 25. We can reasonably expect that they're going to be on the teams that they play for the next 10 years, each of them, right? Unless something changes, there's some injury stuff or whatever. Those teams got their guys, and their guys are going to be there, and they have teams that are built around those dudes who look like they're set to be good at the very least for like the next couple of years, but they always probably going to have a chance to be good because they have those two quarterbacks, and they just went out there slugging it out. And I was watching in the game early, and I noticed something with Mahomes. Now, one thing I do notice about this, like, Mahomes-Josh Allen thing as it goes is that the lines aren't as clearly drawn right now about like the quarterback hierarchy in the NFL. And so what I mean by that is, by the time that Brady Manning became a thing, and I want to say Brady Manning really became a thing in 2003, by that time, Peyton Manning had shaken off that period in early in his career where he ain't really have it like that, and had really squared up and established himself as being one of, if not the best quarterbacks in the NFL, right? The 2004 season, for example, is one of the best seasons any quarterback has ever had. He has stepped up at that point. Tom Brady by then was young guy, Super Bowl champion, and I don't think was as good as Manning was then, but was coming into his own, and he had the hardware, right? Like, we clearly had a rivalry that we could explain. Their teams were about as good as each other. It's starting to meet deep into the playoffs. And so on one side, you had the guy with all the stats, and on the other side, you had the guy with the rings, right? But it was clear. It was like Brady versus Manning. This is going to be what it's going to be for a while, though that never fully materialized. They had that game in the 2006 AFC Championship game where the Colts came back and eventually wound up winning their Super Bowl that they won with Peyton Manning. But after that, we didn't really get it between those two teams. We didn't have those face-offs, right? You also wind up with, like, Tom Brady tears his ACL in 2008. Peyton Manning has the neck injury in 2011. Like, they just didn't meet in the playoffs anymore. The last time we got them was when Manning was in Denver in 2015. I think that game ended 20-18, and the Patriots didn't get the two-point conversion, right? But these two dudes we talking about right here, this could be different, right? We've already gotten, this is the second playoff game that they played against each other. This is basically, it's interesting because Mahomes is the older one in this, where Manning was the older one before. But Mahomes is the established champion at this point, right? Josh Allen is playing the Peyton Manning role in that rivalry, except as much as we fawn over Mahomes, we don't talk about him as like winner guy the way that we talked about Tom Brady as being winner guy, in part because Mahomes is so much better than Manning was at that point. Like, winner guy was what you had to hold on to. With Mahomes, you're holding on to, this dude seemed like Jordan, you know? And Josh Allen on this other end, like, it's here now, right? It's been a steady climb. It's been steady improvement. And I didn't really see much of what worried me about Josh Allen coming into that game, which was his tendency for YOLO behavior. Like, he seems to have even taken care of that. And if he's taking care of that, I don't know what anybody is supposed to do with this dude. But anyway, I was talking about them, like, being matched up and juxtaposed against each other. Like, I don't feel like coming into this game, we were like, Mahomes, Allen, the playoffs. It was more like Chiefs, Bills, the playoffs. Even though, it's something they mentioned in the broadcast, those two guys account for a higher percentage of their team's total offense than any other two players in the NFL. So even when you're talking about the teams, you're talking about the guys, by and large, with them. But this is it. And I was looking at Mahomes early in that game, and I was like, and I don't know this, right? I'm obviously guessing and watching from a very comfortable distance, but I'm watching it and I'm like, that looked like a dude that's tired of hearing about Josh Allen. Like, when you think about this year, we spent more time talking about what isn't there or might not be there with Patrick Mahomes. And y'all, because I sure as hell wasn't doing this, and y'all, you know how I feel about people saying y'all, but you know what I mean. But y'all was out here talking about how the league had figured Patrick Mahomes out. Remember that? Oh, they've gotten to the bottom of him. They figured this out. You think that dude didn't hear all that? You think that dude didn't hear people out here talking about Josh Allen? He's as good as Patrick Mahomes? You think he didn't hear people saying that? You think that didn't, like, factor in just a little bit? Because Mahomes got a lot more of that winner guy and competitor guy in him that I think we give him credit for. And if you don't believe me on that, the man wasn't shook when the Bills scored a touchdown with 13 seconds left. Just put his helmet on, was like, all right, cool. We're going to go out here and we're going to do this. And magically somehow they did, right? But I saw that in Mahomes. And then on the other side with Josh Allen, do I think he's as good as Patrick Mahomes? No. Do I think that is the ridiculous proposition that I thought it was a year ago? No, I don't. Like, I still can't believe it happened, right? I still can't believe it all came together. But the absolute best case scenario on Josh Allen is that somehow he would harness all of this natural ability he had. And what do you know? Maybe he would clean up some things. He'd stop turning the ball over. He would stop panicking. He would suddenly become accurate. Every single one of those things appears to have happened. Or at least enough of them, right? Like last year, he completed almost 70% of his passes. This year, it was somewhere around 63%. But like I said, coming out of last year, I didn't think he was ever going to put up numbers like that again, but that didn't necessarily mean that he wasn't going to be better than he was then. Said the same thing about Patrick Mahomes. Like, he may never throw 50 touchdown passes again, but that doesn't mean he hasn't gotten better. Like, some things are going to change and evolve, but they're still going to be monsters. And they just gave us a monster game. And that ending, Josh Allen threw... Let me tell you a quirk about Josh Allen's career. They played a game against Arizona. I guess it was last season. And late in the game, I remember, Josh Allen threw a ball to the left side of the end zone, near the pylon, threw it basically to a spot for Stephon Diggs. I think it was Stephon Diggs, but for Stephon Diggs to go get it late in the game to take the lead. And I was like, yo, that's the biggest throw of Josh Allen's career, right? Like, it showed a level of growth. It was like all that stuff that you want from your quarterback in those moments situationally, getting it done. And you know what happened after that? A little play that they begin to call the Hail Murray. The one where Kyler Murray took a snap, rolled left, and then just threw it up in the air. DeAndre Hopkins got it. Fast forward to Sunday. They get the ball. Dude, I was sending texts to people. Foxworth got one of these. After the Chiefs had scored the touchdown to go ahead in regulation, I sent a text to Foxworth. I sent it to a couple other people, and I was like, I can't believe I'm saying this, but did they leave Josh Allen too much time? And the answer was yes. They left Josh Allen too much time. Made that big throw, scored the touchdown, 13 seconds left, and the Bills lost the game without Josh Allen ever getting back on the field. 13 seconds, the Chiefs went from the 20 to a makeable field goal. Like, it's not like Bucker made it from 55. He made it from 48. They got down to the 31-yard line in 10 seconds. You can blame the Buffalo defense and all this stuff or whatever. Yeah, whatever. Okay? Give it to the Chiefs. They got down there and they got it done, and then the Chiefs got the ball again and the Bills defense just didn't have nothing left and they couldn't handle it. I can't think of the last time I saw a game that good. I just want to know this. Are we going to position this as Mahomes-Allen for the next however long, right? Like, Lamar Jackson may have a say in this. Who knows? There's a couple other people. But are we going to position it as Mahomes and Allen for the next decade? I'm a little curious, and I got to say, I'm also a little bit nervous. Let me explain to you why I'm a little bit nervous, okay? You guys have to remember the quarterback position in the NFL has only, like, I would say, truly been, call it, reasonably integrated. Not so much fully, but at least reasonably integrated for the last 20 years. Right? It's only like within the last 20 years that it's not just a total shock that somebody has a black quarterback. You still got a lot of teams that have had black quarterbacks start games, but have never had like a black starting quarterback. Like, this is still a new idea in the NFL. And having simultaneously multiple black quarterbacks be consistently somewhere between very good and excellent is also relatively new, just because there weren't enough black quarterbacks for the longest. Okay. But Patrick Mahomes is the first black quarterback to ever get to kind of a consensus best quarterback in the league place. I can't think of who I might be forgetting in this. Like, there are guys that have played, had seasons where you could argue they were as good as anybody else. Even as I talked about that Peyton Manning season in 04, Dante Culpepper was about as good as he was in that season. Cam Newton, 2015, for example. Like, you've had guys in that MVP tier or whatever. But what we've never had is a black quarterback with someone that you could point to as the consistent, this is going to be your rival. Now, you think about quarterback rivalries over time. There really isn't one that involves a black quarterback. This will be the first one. And I don't know exactly how that's going to work in football, but I know how that works in basketball. And all of a sudden, it turns into a boxing match. It turns into Larry Holmes and Jerry Cooney very, very fast. It turns into Floyd Mayweather and Ricky Hatton, who ain't even from America, very, very fast when we get to this place. And I fear that a lot of y'all are going to mess this Mahomes-Josh Allen thing up because you can't just enjoy it and you got to turn it into something else. And that's right, talking about y'all, okay? Because this ain't like it's Michael Vick versus Josh Allen. You understand what I'm saying? Mahomes occupies a little bit of a different space. You see what I mean? Like, let's just say Mahomes is not the Fab Five of the NFL. He ain't the Duke of the NFL, but he ain't the UNLV of the NFL. He ain't the Georgetown of the NFL. You get what I'm saying here? Josh Allen, whether he wants to be or not, you about to be Duke. You about to get a whole lot of fans for the wrong reasons if we make this Mahomes versus Allen. If we make this Mahomes versus Allen, Josh Allen ain't never going to have as many people talk about how smart he is as they about to as we make this, if we make this Mahomes versus Allen. That's my worry. That's my one thing. Y'all don't really know, like, how to act about this. I'm just telling you, right? Black people, we've gotten to a point now. We got enough black quarterbacks. We don't feel obligated to root for all of them. In fact, if you look on the internet, we be talking shit about them when they don't necessarily play well. Like, that's where we've gotten. That's progress, baby. That's progress. We can do that. We ain't got to claim every single one of them. It ain't got to be like the late 1990s. That time my daddy looked at me and said, hey, Tony Banks can play. We don't have to live like that no more. So we, by and large, don't live like that no more. It's so many white dudes playing quarterback. Y'all ain't never had to live like that. But look around your world. That's just what y'all do. Not all of them, but enough. Enough. And you know I'm not wrong. Don't try to sit over there and get mad. You know I'm not wrong, right? And this is also not like basketball, where with Lakers and Celtics and Bird and Magic, you still had some white folks on the Magic side, and that's because white people appear to have a bit of a low self-esteem when it comes to themselves in basketball and refuse to believe that a white dude can actually be very good. And so they good to tear them down as a result. Y'all strange like that. I don't really get it, but you know what I'm talking about. You've experienced the phenomenon. So if we gonna get to the Mahomes Allen, which is what it should be, I think we need to get the committee together, right? We got to put on our It Takes All of Us hat. We're going to need to all come together and just make the decision that we not going to let this go the wrong way. Buffalo, I really need y'all to do y'all's part here because Josh Allen is y'all's guy, right? Y'all was tripping before when y'all tried to put him in the Mahomes sentence, but I'm right here with you now. This makes sense. Don't mess this up for us. Because I like Josh Allen now. I got not a bad thing to say. I might show up out here with a Josh Allen jersey one day. I'm telling you, I'm on board. I'm here. I'm with you. Let me stay. Let me kick it. I want to go up there and hang out with Benny the Butcher and them. You know what I'm saying? Let me stay there. Don't make this impossible. But can I trust it? And the answer is not really. By the way, can I send a shout out to my man, Joey Burrow? I am a big Joe Burrow fan, too. Like, I just like his get down. I can't believe they won that game. I can't imagine a world where you get sacked 9 times and your team still wins the game. Like, that is wild to me. But I like Joe Burrow's get down, and those are still the Cincinnati Bengals. Like, for you to get the Cincinnati Bengals to the AFC Championship game, All I can do is give you props. That's it. There's nothing else I can do. There is nothing else I can say other than to heap props upon you. They got some talent, too. Like, when you think about this, they out there with Joe Mixon, Joe Burrow, and Ja'Marr Chase on offense. Yo, that's the nucleus. They got Bomani, Gabe, Foxworth, Shannon Penn, and Nick Wright on the offensive line. Like, that's something they're going to need to do something about. But shout out to you, Joe Burrow. But shout out to us, all of us. It's going to take all of us again, but in a different way. And you realize it's about to be off-season speculation about not just Aaron Rodgers, but also Tom Brady. Does that sound fun, guys? Does that sound fun? Like, at least with Tom Brady, we're just going to be trying to figure out whether or not he's going to come back. That's a pretty simple one. And I don't think that he's going to handle it in the way that Brett Favre did when he was doing that. Can you imagine if we had to deal with the Brett Favre retirement saga in the era of social media? Because that we never really had to do. And it's really not social media, it's Twitter, right? Because there was Facebook and it was kind of cracking by then. But like, we didn't have to deal with Twitter at that point. It would have been so miserable. So now we got the Aaron Rodgers situation where he set himself up so that he could get the hell out of Dodge, except now he seems to like it in Dodge. But then he came after the game and was like, I don't really necessarily know if this is what I want to do. And with Tom Brady, we're hearing it's not a clear-cut decision whether or not he is going to return. And did anybody notice, by the way? Well, I guess I hear you guys definitely noticed about Aaron Rodgers on the tweets, but neither of them was especially good. And what is lost from last postseason is that Tom Brady did not play well in the NFC portion of it. Like, Super Bowl came and they won and he was all right then. Yes. But prior to that, Brady didn't have what, three interceptions on three consecutive possessions against the Packers? Like, late in the game? He was trying to give the game away at the end last year. He wasn't great at that point. Tom Brady is so good and so bright that he's able to do things in the regular season that are regular season things, and then it just gets a little dicier into postseason. And that happens to guys when they get older, and the same thing is the case with Aaron Rodgers. And so what we got with both of them that I find to be interesting is we got old dudes, right? Like, Tom Brady old makes you ignore that Aaron Rodgers is not, like, kind of old. He's old. But Tom Brady's so old that it, like, our concept of what like 38 and 39 means is like totally different, especially since 38 and 39 looks so much younger in this day and age. But either team will take those guys back if they come back, but especially Aaron Rodgers. He look like, I mean, both, they look MVP-ish. But I'm asking you this sincerely, and this is no insult to either of these two old guys. After what you saw on Sunday night, are you sure that those two guys are better than Patrick Mahomes and Josh Allen? Either of them. Like, are you sure that when we start talking about coming out here for the 2022 season, that those two guys will be as good as them? Now, again, if you're not as good as those two guys, that's not saying you bad. I'm just telling you, you've probably seen what the best is going to be from both of them. But they got two teams that's going to be crossing their fingers, hoping they come back. Hoping they come back. And I don't blame them in the least. Just telling you, times have probably been as good as they are going to be. Gabe, we got to decide how we going to, like, I don't need to know in advance. I don't need to guess right. Just let me know what y'all going to do. Is there any way that we can impose a deadline on them? Do it for everybody, man. It'll be better for them too. You know what I'm saying? Like, come on, man, just give us a deadline. And so we can have this. We can just go on about our business. But hey, man, both of them, like, I don't want to say Aaron Rodgers looked old. And you could say that it's not Tom Brady's fault that their offensive line was getting owned. Because, I mean, it is not his fault that they were getting owned. But that also doesn't mean that he played well. Like, he did not. The Packers, it looked kind of like, Gabe, we had talked about this on Foxworth Friday. you're going to be playing playoff games in an icebox at Lambeau Field, and you hope to get home field advantage, and it's Aaron Rodgers trying to throw a brick around. They lost to the 49ers when the 49ers not only had Jimmy Garoppolo as their quarterback, but also did not score an offensive touchdown. Like, they just couldn't do it. And I was watching Get Up before we came in here to record this. And Rob Domofsky, who covers the Packers for ESPN, he said he was talking to a scout. And this is where it gets interesting. As much as we're like, Aaron Rodgers could be like, yeah, you know, are you still saying they didn't give you enough? His Domofsky's thing was, the scout is like, look, the 49ers got a defense with like six studs on it. Like, the feeling there was that the talent level of the 49ers was just vastly superior to that of the Packers, and the Packers are about to be in a messed up salary cap situation. Like, there's no telling what Aaron Rodgers might do, right? I don't know. I don't know how bad Tom Brady wants to keep playing football. Like, none of this, right? I have no answer or no handle on what's going to go down with either of them. But I do feel like what happened over the weekend, it felt like an official changing of the guard. It felt like this is now a league that's going to belong to Patrick Mahomes and is going to belong to Josh Allen. And we're going to have Joe Burrow out here getting it done. Matt Stafford, this is so wild. He might get to go to the Super Bowl. Ain't that crazy? Or Jimmy Garoppolo, Gabe, how many was it, six straight wins for your boys over the Rams?
Somewhere or thereabouts.
Yeah.
With the 49ers against the Packers in the playoffs as well.
Yes. 4-0 against Rodgers. So two of those, one of them was Colin Kaepernick playing one of the greatest games I've ever seen, right? Like, the game where he ran for like 180 yards and 150 of them were before contact. One of them was Kaepernick at Lambeau Field. And then this one, I forget what the fourth one. Oh, the other NFC Championship game a couple years ago where they ain't even let Jimmy Garoppolo throw the ball no more. Like, you realize how crazy it's going to be if Jimmy Garoppolo go to a second Super Bowl?
Hearing what you guys talked about on Friday, everything came true,
yeah.
You know, and then you hear what the teammates say about him and they're like, oh, you know, he's our guy. He's our leader. We kind of need him. It's just interesting to have the leader of your team not be good and like the reason that it's holding your team back.
Yeah, he must be really cool. You know what I'm saying? He must always pick up the check. Like they be ride for him and everybody knows he's sorry. Everybody knows, and he looks so sorry, but they keep, like, maybe Kyle Shanahan is every bit the genius they say. Like, at some point, that becomes the only conclusion that you, if Kyle Shanahan were to win a Super Bowl with Jimmy Garoppolo, and not like winning a Super Bowl with Trent Dilfer when you have the greatest defense of all time, right? Like, the 49ers have a good defense, a very good defense, but we're not talking about the 2000 Ravens. They win a Super Bowl with Jimmy Garoppolo as quarterback, but then they might be stuck with him. I'm never going to be at a point where you're going to be able to make me believe that you can win a Super Bowl with Jimmy Garoppolo as your quarterback. Like, I watched him, he's 30. I watched him get really close, and I watched him in that game throw an interception with his eyes closed. I can't never let that slide. I'm sorry. If You Haven't Heard is brought to you by the new Love Your Car Guarantee from CarMax. CarMax, here to innovate.
We know you can't be on top of all the news and information of the day. No need for the social media feeds. We got you. Now, If You Haven't Heard.
All right, Bomani, this first story comes from tech.
Hi, I'm Adrienne Westenfeld of Esquire. Last week, a cryptocurrency group made news with a triumphant tweet about their acquisition of a rare art book called Jodorowsky's Dune, the guidebook to an ambitious but ill-fated film adaptation of Frank Herbert's science fiction classic. The group, called Spice DAO, an acronym for Decentralized Anonymous Organization, tweeted about their plans to make the book public and adapt it into an animated series. There's just one problem. They don't actually own the rights to Dune. All they own is one $3 million book. Before we get too deep into this story of NFT brain gone wrong, a little history. Back in 1974, director Alexander Jodorowsky set out to make a film adaptation of Dune. The project was killed due to a lack of funding, but not before it became the stuff of Hollywood legend. Starring Salvador Dali, Orson Welles, and Mick Jagger, the film was set to be 14 hours long, with a score by Pink Floyd. Before the project was canned, Jodorowsky presented studio execs with an extensive book of concept art. Somewhere between 10 and 20 copies of this book still exist. Periodically, they come up at auction, where they usually fetch around $25,000. This is where Spice DAO comes in. Recently, one such copy came up for auction at Christie's. Spice.io swooped in with a bid of $3 million, way, way over asking price, and more than 100 times the modest estimate. Their stated mission was to convert the book into a collection of NFTs that are, in their words, technically innovative and culturally disruptive. They would then burn the book, record a video of the book burning, and sell that video as an NFT. Here's where Spice.io made an embarrassing mistake. Buying Jodorowsky's Dune doesn't give them the copyright to Frank Herbert's Dune, nor the rights to produce Jodorowsky's cinematic vision. All they get out of this purchase is one very old, very expensive book. Spice.io's intentions to make the book public are all well and good, or they would be if the book wasn't already available for free online. Ultimately, it's a very expensive mistake, one that illuminates how some crypto groups with millions to burn don't even know what they're buying. In Dune, one of Herbert's memorable characters, the Reverend Mother Gaius Helen Mohiam, says to Paul Atreides, "Hope clouds observation." It's safe to say hope clouded observation in this tale of crypto folly.
So what's interesting about this game for me is that, you know, my feelings about the funny money, but the NFT game, I don't view the same way as I view the funny money. Like, I understand what people are doing there. And it's basically the idea that if collecting art that can be reproduced is a thing, why would getting a digital original not be a thing? Right. Okay. It's a value things as you see them sort of situation. All right, cool. I get that. But what is very clear about all things blockchain is we have reached the point where we got a lot of people who have heard of these things but don't actually understand them. And so as a result, they know enough to think they know but don't know that they don't know and are going to make horrific decisions. But what's so wild about this one to me is these dudes bought this book and then got on the internet to tell the world that they bought the book. And immediately the people were like, "No, dummy, that's not how it works." Like, they didn't run this by anybody? Are you talking about buying $3 million in effect for intellectual property? And there was nobody around you to be like, "Hey, dog, I don't think that's going to play the way you think it is." How is that possible? Because, like, the way that they got scammed on this, this isn't even really like a crypto scam. This is an old-fashioned scam that, when I run this by my lawyer, that would generally be how you do anything like this, right? Like, this isn't like you invested in a coin and now suddenly the coin is out of business. This wasn't that. You paid $3 million with a plan that you had the exclusives. And on every level, it was like, "Nah, we all got that."
There needs to be some sort of board or alliance that they can run these big decisions by.
This just seems so obvious that somebody involved in your operation, if the whole internet could tell you at one time and nobody in your crew could, you're doing something wrong, homie.
It's funny, like, a lot of innovation comes from re-engineering, but this isn't necessarily that. It's more just coming up with new names for old things.
Yes. One of the failings of tech, and it's becoming a societal failing, is a poor grasp of history, or not even just a grasp of history, but an appreciation for it and why it is important. Like, I think I told you about this, that when Clubhouse was first cracking and they did like a live reading of the Lion King musical, and it was riveting and people were listening to it. And I was like, this is listening to the radio back in the day, like War of the Worlds, you know, like it's that kind of thing. But I don't know if the people doing this even think about things in those terms to realize, guys, you just invented the radio. Like, that's what all this is. It's like, "Yo, we came up with this new thing." No, you invented the radio. Like, they all think they've come up with something that nobody has done before. And they don't make stuff like that, really. Like, we're putting new spins on old stuff when it comes to just about everything.
All right, this next one is from Otto. Here it is.
I'm Tom Krischer from the Associated Press in Detroit. In December of 2019, a Tesla Model S that was operating on autopilot left a freeway in Gardena, California, near Los Angeles. It ran a red light at a high speed, hit a Honda Civic, killed two people. After nearly a two-year investigation, the authorities charged the Tesla driver with two counts of vehicular manslaughter. This is the first case that we, as well as some experts, could find in which a driver was charged with a crime in a fatal crash that was using one of these partially automated driver assist systems that are now available in just about every new vehicle. Kevin George Azid Riyad, who is 27, pleaded not guilty and he's free on bail. He was charged in October. The charging documents don't say anything about autopilot. That system can keep a car in its lane and keep it from hitting vehicles in front of it, but it's frequently misused by drivers. Many think it's a self-driving car, but it's not, and they rely too much on it. The charges could be a warning for drivers with these systems that they need to pay attention at all times. Tesla has had a lot of problems with abuse. One Tesla driver was caught in the Oakland area riding down a freeway in the back seat with nobody behind the wheel. The NTSB and the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration have been investigating autopilot for years. NHTSA has sent teams to 26 crashes involving Tesla since 2016, in which 11 people were killed. Last year, the agency opened an investigation into Teslas on autopilot crashing into emergency vehicles that were parked on roadways. In a dozen crashes in that probe, at least 17 people were hurt. One person was killed. There are about 765,000 Teslas with autopilot in the United States. Tesla didn't answer our messages seeking comment. Families of the two people killed in the Gardena crash have sued Riyadh and Tesla. Legal experts we talked to say Tesla could be legally, criminally, or morally responsible if it put dangerous technology on the road.
Stop being lazy and drive your own car. That's all I'm saying. If you can't afford a driver, then you got to drive your own car. That just seems to be the only way I would be willing to play it. Like, I don't know how common, like, he just talked about how common these, I said, I don't know, like he didn't just say. Like, he gave us some idea of how common these kinds of things are or whatever. Like, I don't have the macro level numbers of what percentage, you know what I mean? All that. Just drive your own car. That's all I'm saying. Just, I know it sounds cool. It really does. Just drive your own car. Think about it this way. Planes got autopilot, right? But the pilot still be like piloting. And I know what you're thinking. I mean, it's a plane. Of course, the stakes are too high. It's a car that you're probably letting go fast. That's all I got.
All right, Bo, this last story comes from science. Here it is.
This is Alyssa Luckpat with the New York Times, and I wrote a story about the city of Sunnyvale, California, and its unwanted visitors. So about every night for the last few years, 1,000 visitors have enjoyed a night on the town, but they're not patronizing the businesses. Instead, they're eating scraps outside and then crapping on the sidewalks because they're crows. And the city of Sunnyvale is in Silicon Valley, so it's turning to a very Silicon Valley solution to get rid of the crows, a $20 green laser. So the idea is that this laser will be aimed at the trees where the crows are, and it will make the crows think that there's animals running over the branches, and it'll make the crows fly away. However, the experts that I talked to said that the crows likely will not fully disperse, because once a crow feels comfortable in a place, they don't really want to leave. However, if you aim firecrackers at the birds or play audio of a crow in distress, then they might decide they want to go. And the crows have been a problem in Sunnyvale for a few years. They have dive bombed onto diners and dropped leaves and sticks on people. The only methods that could get rid of all of them are illegal, such as blasting them with dynamite. But that being said, one expert I talked to said that the crows are not going to be an issue for the health of the residents of Sunnyvale, because as he said, you'd have to lick all the crow droppings on a park bench to come even remotely close to catching something from them.
Now I'm just here to tell you that where I'm from, Texas, they might shoot them crows with lasers, laser beams, the red dot. That would just be for aiming. They get them things out of there. Like, once the crows get comfortable, they keep coming back. I mean, I don't know. I mean, you say, I don't know how many of your dead homies going to have to be laying on the sidewalk before you decide that y'all ladies ain't going to do this no more. And I know Silicon Valley, that ain't really their thing. And to be honest, it ain't really my thing either. But they're just like, yo, maybe we can come up with a laser thing or whatever. Damn, that does seem like a tough play, though, right? Like, we just have these birds, and they keep boo-booing everywhere we go, and we find it to be a problem. And, you know, yeah, these don't strike me as people that are, like, animal people. You know what I mean?
I feel like when I had been in New York, the move I see there, the spikes on top of buildings, and they're almost, like, integrated into the architecture of the building to, like, deter birds from sitting on the edge there and pooping.
Oh, I didn't realize that's what that was for. Like, I know they got all kinds of spikes and stuff around the city to stop, like, homeless people from sitting down. You notice one thing New York ain't got is a lot of place for you to sit down. More importantly, not to sleep.
The connection that you made there just, like, really hits hard, though.
Yes.
I mean, like, really hits hard. Like, I mean, that's the way that the city is thinking about its houseless population or people who just want to sit down, seeing them as crows.
Yep, keep it moving, right? They don't want any of them just post it up. Nope. Keep it moving. Yay, man. It's cold world, dog. It's cold world.
Hey, this is Bomani. You have reached the right time voicemail. Say whatever you want. Get creative with it. But this is your place to talk back to the show. So talk back. Peace.
All right, Bo. Voicemail time. This week, that time you came up against a future pro in your youth.
Yes.
And the experience that came along with it, whether you lost or not. What's interesting about this segment, at least over the last few years for me and just getting like more experience with the show and with our fan base, is hearing just how cold some people, like some athletes I've never really heard of, yes, are in like little towns across America, but they were like the star in that town.
Yes.
Our first one, our guy didn't leave his name or where he's from. It's a good story. Here it is.
Hey, man, I got to tell you this story. So this guy didn't even make it to the league. He didn't even make it to the NBA. He made it to the G League. But this is how cold these athletes are. So look, one day, I'm in high school tryouts. My boy, he's guarding this future G Leaguer, Kevin Olekabi. He's just guarding him after practice. Everybody's just messing around. I turn around. I'm just getting ready to go home. And all of a sudden, the whole gym just goes, oh! I turn around. My boy is laying on the ground with his shoes off while Kevin Olekabi is standing over him. Everybody's just running up to him laughing. This man got shaked out of his shoes. He got shook out of his shoes, Bo. He got crossed out of his shoes by a future G Leaguer. This isn't even an NBA player, a future G Leaguer. That's when I knew it's levels to this game.
Hold on. What was the last name again?
Olekabi? Kevin Olekabi?
I'm just asking because, like, is that O with an apostrophe? Because it sounds like the new phenomenon took place. Like, so you said even the white dudes are shaking you out of your shoes at that level. I can't fire this man for anything. Damn, he make the court, he mean business. Don't get Billy Hoed. You know what I'm saying?
All right, this next one comes from Blair in Memphis. Here it is.
The time I ran into a pro, 2008. And the pro I ran into, Jonathan Williams III. Now, a lot of y'all might not know Jonathan Williams III, but he played for Gonzaga for 4 years. He was All-American. He played on the Gonzaga team and lost to UNC in the title game. So, like, he's a pretty decorated dude. And we were in the 7th and 8th grade, respectively. I was in the 7th and he was in the 8th. So I got invited to the open gym for my middle school team. Coach had liked the way I had been hooping. He had saw my game and got so much better from the previous year trying out. He just was determined to get me on the team this year. Oh, I'm in the open gym, and I'm hooping. I'm balling out, making threes, dropping dimes, playing defense, finishing at the cup. I mean, like, I'm showing out. And the best player, Jonathan Williams, he was like, man, I like this dude. So he picked me up one day. And on the day he picked me up, I'm really feeling it. So, you know, I'm killing it. I probably got, like, 3 straight buckets. And he kicked it to me. I pump fake. I'm driving to the basket, and I go up for a layup. It was a little short, and I'm going to follow up the rebound, and I just see a black figure skying over my shoulder. And the next thing I know, Jonathan Williams III, manhood was on my neck. He had dunked on his own teammate. So that was when I knew probably won't be making it to the NBA. Be safe, be smooth, bro.
He dunked on his own team. Wow. I like what we doing with the theme, though, right? Like, you ain't even got to know who these cats are.
It doesn't discriminate.
Not at all.
All right. Our last comes from Peter in Tampa, but he said he was from Advanced, North Carolina. I figured you may know where that is.
I'll have to Google that myself.
I played ball over at UNC Charlotte as we were just becoming D1. There was one summer, I think it was in 2013 or 2014, that I was home around Winston-Salem right before we went down for a summer camp. And the local West Forsyth YMCA was always a good place for Winston-Salem athletes to come home over the summer and get some pickup and get some run. We had baseball players, basketball players, you know, football players. One day we had Eric Ebron and one of the other defensive ends for UNC Chapel Hill come through. I don't really remember his name. But what I do remember is how high this man, Ebron, could jump. Now, I was waiting to get run-in on the next game. So we were just, like, kind of scouting, chirping a little bit, just seeing what was up. Old buddy, the D-end, about around half-court, intercepted a pass, and Ebron just starts sprinting down the court, probably from the other free throw line, and probably within, like, 4 or 5 stretches already just about at the free throw line. Now, unfortunately for the other team here, there was one baseball player from Belmont Abbey who was trying to sprint back and get back on defense, probably take a charge, something like that. So the D end, probably around the 3-point line, sees Ebron sprinting down, pulls up, gives him a nice little underhand lob. Now, the second baseman, mind you, not even really flirting with 6 feet tall, right? He's 5'10", 5'11", and 3/4 on a good day. And he goes up to try to steal this pass and run the fast break the other way. Now, when I tell you, I see Eric Ebron jump out of the gym and put his groin right to this man's gullet and just yams all over him. No one even can really remember what the score was at that point. But, you know, when something like that happens, the game is over.
Yeah, dude, I'd be terrible to see, like, a player particularly like Eric Ebron show up on a basketball court. Like, the super athletic tight end, like the power forward type. No, 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 no. When you come, I go. That's it. Like, I know how that movie ends right there. Nah, 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 homie. You can keep that. But ladies and gentlemen, thanks so much for joining us here on The Right Time. We do this 3 times a week. Gabe Bassay handling everything behind the scenes. Thank you, sir. Also, thank you to our If You Haven't Heard contributors. Thanks to Adrian Westenfield of Esquire. Check out her story on Crypto Bros spending $3 million thinking they bought the rights to something that they don't own. Thanks to Tom Krischer of the Associated Press. Check out his story on a driver catching a felony charge for what happened when he put his Tesla on autopilot. And thank you to Alyssa Luckpat of the New York Times. Check out her story about a California city being overrun by crows. Remember, follow The Right Time. Rate us, review us, give us 5 stars. You only give us 4 stars. I'm inclined to believe you are a hater. And we'll talk to you guys in a couple of days. Take it easy.
Thanks for checking out The Right Time with Bomani Jones Podcast.
You can listen or follow on the ESPN app or wherever you listen to podcasts.
The Right Time
with Bomani Jones.